Welcome to Empire Building, the podcast where we talk about building big businesses and even bigger lives. I'm your co-host, Sarah Reynolds.
I'm Seychelle Van Poel.
I'm Via Williams.
And I'm Wendy Papazian. Here's the sobering truth. One in three Americans has saved nothing for retirement. And 56% of Americans have saved less than $10,000.
Okay, you're
That's
kind of
crazy.
A Debbie Downer.
I know.
Sorry, guys.
Yeah. Well, the problem is that most of us want it all, and we want it all right now, and we're not willing to give up anything, none of the small pleasures today, to have whatever we want in the future. So today, we're going to be discussing things that every millionaire knows, but the rest of us really don't have a clue about it. The title of our episode today is The 6 Habits You Need to Become a Millionaire.
I love that.
Yep. We're going to be discussing Say No to Say Yes, how to pay your investment fund first. We're going to talk about focusing on net worth versus income. We're going to talk about learning the rules of money. We're going to talk about learning how to leverage your mind, your money and time. And the last one is we're going to learn how to surround yourself with success. And I'm just going to start the discussion off, ladies, by asking you, I'm just curious, what's your definition of wealth?
I'll go first if you want. So ours is when our mission in life, right, is to become happier, healthier, and wealthier through our businesses. And so wealth has been a big focus of something that we really work on personally, but also with our team members. And so when I think about the broad term for us, it's when our passive income from our investments funds our perfect life. But more specifically, Wendy, it's really when we're able to live off of 4% of our total net worth each year comfortably. That's really the number that we're gunning towards.
Great. Yeah. We're going to talk about the 4% rule.
4%.
If you look at the average of the stock market, there's a bunch of like books that talk about that number somewhere between 4 and 6%. But when you look at the average returns of the stock market, right, that's something that if you look at sort of the average over the last, 70, 80 years, that the average return on the stock market is somewhere around 5 to 8%. So for me, I want to be recession proof and be able to live comfortably between our real estate stock, Roth, all of those things, underneath whatever the average of the stock market would produce.
Well, and I think you're also taking into account inflation, Seychelle.
We are.
Probably yes. With the
yeah.
four.
Yeah. We are too. Mm-hmm.
That's awesome. George and I, before we got married, we had a conversation about this. And one of the things that we sort of concluded is wealth is being in a position to basically not have to say no in terms of taking care of our parents, taking care of course, our children and those around us. And then at the same time, being able to live the life that we have by design, where our businesses and passive income is actually what's funding it. So that to me, is wealth.
I love that. Well, and I love that you're also looking at the family aspect of that, because I think if you look at all four of us here on the podcast, we all have an element of family that play into part of our net worth strategy, whether it's kids or whether it's parents or siblings. And so, part of funding that perfect life is not just you. Oftentimes it's you plus an extension usually of a couple of other people.
Yeah. And I don't think we always know that that's going to be the case.
Yeah.
I know for me, my dad was perfectly fine. And then he got diagnosed with larynx cancer and stage 4 larynx cancer. And thankfully he survived. And yet the radiation to his neck and kind of spinal area put him in a wheelchair.
Yeah.
So that just changed where he was employed and working. And, we had to buy a new house for him because it wasn't all at one level. So, your life can change in a minute. And if you don't have the resources to help the people around you, I feel like if God gives you the ability to make money, you should make money.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Not for you, but for the people that you can help.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I love that, Wendy. So well said. We, it's no surprise to you guys probably that I have kind of a five stages that I've defined for us for wealth. You know, I have a survival, stability, secure, thrive, and a freedom. And I have taken the time to think a lot about this topic. As you guys know, it's been my personal journey the last few years, and I have definitions. But I think the bottom line for us is that wealth is being able to do what we want, when we want, and with who we want. And so I do have a specific net worth goal that for me defines the ultimate stage of that five stage definition, which is freedom. You know, for me, freedom, and I've calculated that kind of the similar way that you guys have, where I just know what we want our lifestyle to look like and all the things that we want to do. And so mm-hmm. I've just kind of reverse engineered that and backed it out. And I've attached a net worth goal to that.
I love that. Well, and you know, can I just tell you, I'm so proud of you and your financial journey.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I can remember actually we were on a retreat a couple years ago, 3 years ago. And I don't think it was the retreat that was the wake up call, but it was pretty obvious that you just didn't really want to talk about your finances. Probably because you weren't working on them. And I'm really proud of you.
Thank you. I mean, the example I give people is it's like, you know, when you've creeped up and you've gained weight and mm-hmm. you don't want to get on the scale because you don't want to see the weight. Like you don't want to face it. You're like, you know, actually maybe I can go on a diet for a while and then get on the scale and it won't be so shocking. Like you don't want to face the music, but you actually need to step on that scale so that you have a measurable thing. You know, you have to have a baseline so that if, you know you're losing weight, right? And so, I mean, sitting down and actually assessing your net worth, if you're anything like me and it's kind of a fearful thing for you to do, it's like undressing at the doctor's office. You know, it is really, scary. I think it's really scary.
It's such a powerful first step, right? To anything.
Yeah, it is
right?
a first step.
So it's acknowledgement.
That's exactly right. And I appreciate your vulnerability because I think a lot of people are getting to go on the journey with you. And I am the complete weirdo on the opposite end of the spectrum who like loves this topic, loves talking about it, craves it, wants to learn more about it and have always been like, my parents never talked about this topic, but I think being given the gift of my dad getting Parkinson's when I was really young, I knew that I had to fund not just me, but them at the age of 18. Like I knew that that was just going to have to be part of my journey. And so I have been on such a journey for the last almost 20 years of, I have to figure this out. I'm not by any means the perfect expert on it, but I have to figure this out because I have no other, there's this other piece that I am responsible for at 18 that I got to figure out. Mm-hmm. So I'm like you and I, it's fun that we're like kind of converging in the middle now because I'm the weirdo that's always been like, tell me about that. Now I'm like, I just want to enjoy my margarita Seychelles and my tacos. I don't need any more of that.
Yeah. And I think, because of the six habits that we're going to talk about today, and I think we should launch into the 4% rule. But because of the six habits that we're going to talk about today, I've grown to enjoy it, Seychelles. Like now I do enjoy it. And I'm measuring it now and I face the music, the hard parts over and it, you know, hopefully it only goes up from there, you know?
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
The more you do uncomfortable things, the easier they get.
That's right. Yeah. And I love that we're converging in the middle on that. Yeah. It's so fun.
Yeah. And so before we jump into them, hold on. Wendy didn't share her definition. And I think her definition is a good one. And so I would love Wendy for you to share with all our audience what your definition is of wealth.
Sure. Yeah. Well, I think it's wealthy is when your passive income exceeds the money you need to fund your life by design.
Love it.
Super simple. Yeah. And you can figure out, first of all, you need to figure out what your life by design looks like. That's mm-hmm. the hard part. But then there are a couple of frameworks, Via's favorite word, for figuring out really how much money you'll need in retirement. And then the second one we're going to talk about is how much money you can withdraw annually once you're retired without cutting into your investment principal. So the first one is the multiply by 25 rule. And this is pretty simple. This just estimates how much money you'll need in retirement by multiplying your desired annual income by 25. So if you want to live off $100,000, let's say, you multiply that by 25, right? And what do you get? You get like 2.5 million, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Or if you think it's $40,000, you multiply that by 25, it's 1 million. And then this rule of thumb assumes you'll be to generate an annualized return of 4%
per year.
Yep. And this is really mainly for the stock market. This doesn't necessarily include passive income from rental estate. Properties or things like that. But it's a starting point for a lot of people, because I think a lot of people think like, I don't even know where to start. You know, I don't even know how to figure this out. So that's the multiply by 25 rule. So just take a second and then just realize those are kind of the assets that you need. And then the 4% rule is actually what Seychelles was talking about.
Mm-hmm. Which is actually funny, because I wrote my definition before I was able to read the rest of it. So I was like, oh, perfect.
Yeah. Are you saying you didn't read the script before you put your definition in there?
No, that's actually true, because you asked the question. So I wanted to answer it honestly.
Yeah, of course. Well, and so like what Seychelles was saying is we're assuming 3% inflation, right? So, and then we're assuming that the stock market does what it's always done, which it gives us probably annualized 8% return.
Yep.
Right. So that's what where the 4% comes from. So if we're assuming 8 to 10% and we're being conservative, right? We can take 4% of our nest egg every year. Plus inflation, that's the 3%.
Right. And you should be able to keep your
nut there, basically. So hopefully that makes sense. Yeah. So those are the two frameworks to figure out what you want. But we're really here to talk about habits, right? So habits are one of my favorite things to talk about, I guess. So
why is that?
I don't know. It's my husband. It's his fault. I never used to be like this.
Always your fault.
I think I used to be more fun.
You guys are a great team, though. You make the habits fun.
When did we start adulting, right? Like, when did it start fun?
The 4% rule.
Yay, habits. Well, personally, the financial freedom is what's fun to me. Right. And the ability to do what you want, and then also not to have the stress and worry about money. It's a great feeling.
Yeah.
It's a really good feeling. Yeah. So we're going to talk about habits. I love this quote by F.M. Alexander. He says, people do not decide their futures. They decide their habits, and their habits decide their future. Right. Yeah. So we're talking about installing some good habits in your life. And I'll just start out by sharing a story with you guys, which is about 18 years ago, Jay and I started to track our net worth. Jay had like a lightning moment thanks to Mo Anderson, who was the then president of his company. And he came home and he said, we need to figure out what our net worth is. And of course, I said, what does that mean? And he said, net worth is everything you own minus everything you owe or all your debt. And so we added up everything that we owned, including an old green Toyota Tercel that we shared. That was a big part of our net worth back then.
That's awesome.
And we had a little like 401k or something. And then we subtracted everything we owed because I had some school debt. And we came up with a number of $2,200. And honestly, a lot of you guys listening, that's probably what your net worth is going to be. It's going to be in the thousands.
Yeah.
I see a lot of the new people on my team when we help them start tracking their net worth. And so what I love is in 4 years, you know, earning less than $100,000 together, that was our joint income, we really laid the foundation for becoming a millionaire. Mm-hmm. And these habits are the foundation. And then, so then 7.5 years from when we first figured out our net worth, we actually did become a net millionaire. So basically
starting at $2,200.
Starting at 2,200, less than 7 years. And then in a lot of those years, actually, I didn't have a job. You know, I was a stay-at-home mom during some of those years. So in 2002 is really when we started tracking. 2004 is when I had my son and I quit my job. And so we were making way less. We were probably making about $50,000 a year. And we laid the foundation to go from being $2,200 to a millionaire in about 7 years. So
that's amazing. And that's, I want our listeners to really hear that, because in terms of it does, wherever you're starting, start, meaning track it, know what it is, like what Via said, step on the scale, right? Step on the net worth scale, see where you're starting at, start tracking it. And I mean, the Papazans went from 2,200 to a million in 7 years, which is remarkable. And so wherever you're starting at, start tracking it and have a plan and start building these habits.
Yeah, and I do want to speak personally to those of you who like the Williams household, which is me, went through the downturn back in kind of 2000, depending on when it happened in your area, but here it was 2008 to 10 was the rough part of it. You know, our story, Wendy, is that we almost lost our house. So we went from, I wasn't tracking, but probably approximately a seven-figure net worth, knowing what I know now, and to almost losing our house, and worked a lot of years to build up from that. And I remember part of the avoidance, right, of that first time that we looked at our net worth was shame, because I really made a lot of really great income during the period leading up to that. Really, really good. And I was a top real estate agent in my area at the time. And I was really ashamed that we didn't use any of that income to buy assets. You know, I shouldn't say that. We had a house and everything, but we really didn't use it well. And so when I first started tracking my net worth 2 years ago, it had a negative number in front of it. So your $2,200 sounds awfully good to me for a first go, because it was negative.
Yeah, it was. I think for most people it is negative.
Yeah, I would say that's absolutely normal. And you know, I'm hearing two limiting beliefs that people might have around building net worth. The first one that I hear, Wendy, you made a great comment on, which is you have to have two incomes in order to build wealth, which just isn't true. There's so many ways, and we're going to go over the habits in which you can do that, even if you have a single income in your household to be able to do that. And the second one that I'm hearing is, and I hear this a lot when we talk to clients or when we're teaching, is I went through the downturn and I don't want that whatever investment that they had, I don't want to be in that position again where I feel the pain that I felt during the downturn, or I saw my parents lose a lot of money, assets, jobs, et cetera. So I don't want to do what they did, and I'm not gonna build what they built, because I don't want to lose it all. And so I really appreciate that we're moving through these habits, because wherever you are, you are in control of your destiny, and you don't have to rely on somebody else's circumstance or somebody else's income in order to build the wealth that you want to build.
Yep. So the first habit is really say no to say yes, which is, it sounds simple. You got to learn to live on less than you make, you know? And really we're talking about, instead of buying things today, you're going to invest it for tomorrow. And this can be little things. You know, I can remember I went over to a relative of mine's house, and who they just don't have a lot of money. And one of the things I noticed is that they had a lot of those little things that you see in the line at Target, like magazines, expensive gum, you know, all of these little things that are impulse items, right? Mm-hmm. You know, you buy the gum, it's like $4. You buy an Us Weekly, it's $5, and you think nothing of it. But every time you're going to the store, you're adding $10, $15, $20 to your shopping bill, right? Yeah. And I thought, gosh, I never buy that stuff. Mm-hmm. I just don't. I never, ever, ever buy that stuff. And so it's really just saying like no to all those things so that you can buy an investment property, you know?
A guilty spend that I had on that was I had like a period after Quinn was born that I had like 2 or 3 years where I would stop at Starbucks on the way into the office every morning. And we went back when I was itemizing for our taxes after a year, 2 or 3 of it. And it was like thousands of dollars going to Starbucks. And I was like, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
And so that was one that we cut out in a matter of 3 years. That was a down payment on an investment property. That was it's embarrassing to say that, but that was totally my guilty vice. Yeah, it's so true.
Yeah.
A tactical thing that has helped me with this is doing as much shopping online, even grocery shopping and things like that, because that has really helped me not have impulse, because you're dealing with the list. So that's one tactical thing that you can implement for that.
Well, I would actually argue that even though the little things are important, sometimes it's really the bigger ticket items that make the most difference. So about 50% of a typical American's budget is their car and their house. So, you know, if you feel like you can't save any money, well, why don't you sell your car? Mm-hmm. Right? Get a cheaper car or move out of your house, right? Or if you're renting an expensive place, move into a cheaper place and cut your rent in half. And all of a sudden you've maybe got $1,000 to save every month.
Or get roommates in your current house to cut down
exactly
what your expenses are.
Yep. 100%. Yep. All right. Habit number two is to pay your investment fund first. What do most of us do with our money? Yeah. You know, we get a commission check or we get our check from our boss. And we pay all of our bills.
Yep.
And then we look up and we say, well, anything I've left over, I'm going to put into my investing account.
Yeah, I think one of the biggest habits we've changed as we have increased our net worth, and by the way, we are increasing our net worth.
You're doing an awesome job.
If you don't see the money, you won't spend it or get used to it. Mm-hmm. Most humans, I mean, certainly us, we don't have the self-discipline to not spend it if we have it. Mm-hmm. So what I like about this habit and what I've done is it goes straight into the investment fund and we don't see it. If we mm-hmm. see it, we will buy $1,500 Herman Miller Aeron shares, which is what I did last week, by the way. That's the problem. And so if you don't see it, you won't ever, that's it. You don't have it to spend. Mm-hmm. And I can't stress this habit enough. It probably should have been first. It's a habit. The money has to get allocated before it touches your account, till it touches your discretionary spending account.
One thing when we were early on and didn't have, like, we were, you know, barely making anything, right? Early in our careers, was January, February, and March. We had a rule after Christmas was over, right? We'd pay off the Christmas bills for everybody's gifts. And then January, February, March, there was no extemporaneous spending at all. And every extra amount went to our Roth IRA, SEP IRA, or cash fund. And up until April 1st, literally there were no extra goodies we were like allowing ourselves to buy. And it paid it forward for the beginning of the year. And then we felt like, okay, now for the, not that we go wild the rest of the year, but we felt like we did the big rock first of getting the investment piece over with. And then anything else we could add to it was great. And when you don't have a lot to, like a lot of extra, that kind of helped us chunk it forward first.
I love that. That's something we do with giving too. So you can apply this principle to anything that is you're passionate about. So if you're passionate, like I am, about giving mm-hmm. and tithing first, right? Mm-hmm. So doing tithing and investing first, and then you live off of the money that's after that. You never see the money. So that leads us into habit number three, which is to really focus on your net worth, not income. And this has been a big thing for me personally, because I was heavily focused on my income and not even tracking net worth until a few years ago, sort of like Via. But focusing on the net worth, and it honestly, you're going to make different decisions when you're focusing on that number mm-hmm. versus income.
So true.
That's so right.
True.
Yep.
Yep. 100%. Yeah.
What you measure will grow.
Yeah. Exactly. Well, net worth is the true measure of wealth.
Yes,
it is.
You know, if you think about the Forbes 500 richest people, they're not talking about the richest doctor or the richest realtor or the richest lawyer. It's people who own assets. You know, they own businesses, they own real estate, a lot of commercial real estate. And that's the true measure of your wealth because, you know, the thing about income is, especially income that's not passive, is if you something happens to you, no more money.
No more money.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's right.
No more money.
You want your assets to outlive your income.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So habit number four is to learn the rules of money, right? I don't know about you guys, but I didn't get a business education. Well, I think Sarah did actually. Are you a business
Sarah's
major?
The only one.
Yeah. I did. Yes, I did.
Yeah. She has the biggest business. So there you go.
Yeah. Hey, it works. Yeah.
Well,
but I mean, I didn't really start learning about business until I started my real estate business. Yeah, and it was probably, you know, I started when I was 38. So, and it wasn't like I started studying the business side of it right away. It was probably a few years in, you know, really. So it wasn't until 40. Yeah. But everybody has the opportunity to learn and grow every day. And it depends on how you, you know, what choices you're making. And if you want to learn about money, then you need to study money because money has its own rules.
So where are the best places you guys have learned about money?
Well, I mean, there's the Empire Building Podcast, of course, which is one of my favorites.
Yes, mine too. Some books have had an impact.
Yeah. Well, I love Set for Life. Mm-hmm. It's a book by Scott Trench. It's a Bigger Pockets publication. And it's a really nice primer on wealth building. It kind of lays everything out. Everything's very simple. It's just, I recommend it to people all the time. It's just very, very easy and digestible if you're just starting out.
Yeah. I think that's a great one. Another one I really like too is Tax-Free Wealth. Mm-hmm. And when I was looking at first getting into real estate investing, both Rich Dad, Poor Dad and The Millionaire Real Estate Investor or Hold are all three good books around real estate investing and what that can do for your wealth.
I love that. So habit number five is learn how to leverage your money and time.
This is a really great exercise to do. And essentially what one of the best exercises you can do with this is learning what your dollar per hour is. Because if you can increase your dollar per hour and you multiply that times what the average person works, what, 2,000 hours a year is about what we figure out. So if you're trying to figure out your dollar per hour, what you're going to take is the amount of money you made last year. You're going to divide that by what the average person works, which is 2,000 hours. And that's going to give you your dollar per hour. And what you want to do is if you then know what your dollar per hour is and somebody's asking you to do something or you're looking at part of your job or part of your business that's not going to pay you what that dollar per hour is, you need to either figure out a system or a person that can do that for you so you can focus on more dollar productive activities that will drive your dollar per hour up, thus increasing your average income.
Beautifully explained, Seychelle. That's awesome. No, seriously.
I know, really it was good. Perfect. Yeah, we should record that.
Yeah.
Oh, wait, we did.
It's a great one, though. It was one when somebody told me that in a class, I was like, what?
Yes.
Like, I just had never thought about it. And I mean, even increasing your dollar per hour, right? Like $10 an hour, right? Well, $10 an hour times 2,000. Yeah,
well, and then also telling people in your world sometimes, right? Telling them in your world, like, hey, this is my dollar per hour. They all of a sudden stop asking you certain things that they know are a little bit, not in a prideful way, right?
But well, just letting the people around you know. Is this worth that amount of money?
Yes.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Is it worth it's a whole different way of looking at time and money, I think. Mm-hmm. So let's move into habit number six, because this is a really important one. And habit number six, you guys, is surrounding yourself with success. So for so many years, me and I know you guys and a lot of people have been quoting Jim Rohn. And Jim Rohn famously said, you can predict your future by looking at the five people you spend the most time with. Recently, I read an article, and we'll post it in show notes. I'll find it. Recently, I read an article that says that's actually wrong. And what I mean by that is that it is way more than that. What the article said is there's been a lot of recent research up to a few years ago that shows that it's not just your five people, it's their friends and their friends' friends. Mm-hmm. There's been extensive research, and they did a lot of research on obesity of all things, where if they started tracking friends of friends of friends, and it goes way wider than the top five people you spend time with. This is the people in general and their worlds that you spend the most time with. This is so, so crucial, especially if this is a new habit for you like it is for me over the last few years. You know, if you're not surrounding people that measure this, they're going to be measuring income and things, material possessions that they're buying and instant gratification and the dopamine and the rewards are going to be set in for that, right?
Yeah. Well, imagine if you have a friend who's like, hey, let's go shopping. Like you have a shopping friend, right? Mm-hmm. Or you have a friend who's like, you know what? That's just a waste of money. I don't want to go and spend money on a handbag, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, personally, I could be swayed either way. But you know, you don't want to have too many friends that are always bugging you to go buy expensive handbags, right?
Yeah.
So this was one of the reasons why, like in our late 20s, early 30s, before Quinny, we would throw more house parties than we would go out and meet people at bars or restaurants. And we would have people over and we'd all cook and like everybody bring something was because your bill at the end of the night was like nothing compared to what it was if you kept meeting people out at restaurants and bars.
Okay, guys. Well, those are the six, our six habits. And so just to recap, habit number one, we learned say no to say yes, right? So making sure that you are living on less than what you make. Habit two is pay your investment fund first before you ever see the money. Habit number three is focusing on your net worth and not your income. Habit four was learning the rules of money. So as much as you can learn about the rules of money, because most of us were not taught that growing up. And then habit number five is learn how to leverage your money and your time. And then habit number six, surround yourself with success. Be very mindful of who you're surrounding yourself with.
Build your tribe around
building your net worth. Love this.
Yes. Love it.
Great job, guys.
Great session, guys.
Thanks,
everybody. Y'all. Thanks for joining.
Thanks for listening to Empire Building. If you like what you heard, join our tribe by subscribing on your favorite podcast platform and help us spread the word by leaving a 5-star rating and review. Until next time, wishing you a life worth living. And remember, you are an empire builder.
This This podcast is for general informational purposes only. The views, thoughts, and opinions of the guest represent those of the guest and not KWRI and its affiliates, and should not be construed as financial, economic, legal, tax, or other advice. This podcast is provided without any warranty or guarantee of its accuracy, completeness, timeliness, or results from using the information.